Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Linda, and this is Soul in the City. And we're just glad to have you on a Sunday evening. We're so glad. I have some fantastic guests, and we'll be talking on some hot topics. You're welcome to call in, and the guest call-in number is 760-695-1120. We're going to start off the show by finishing up a little Marvin Gaye. It's real apropos. What's going on? Okay, that was Marvin Gaye and What's Going On. And this is Linda, and it's Sunday, and it's Soul in the City. We're just going to take a deep breath. If you've done what I've done today and been going around busy, let's just take a deep breath. Father, Mother God, we just thank you for time together, time to reflect, time to open our minds, time to step into a new consciousness, into a world that is changing, but open up our minds to receive understanding and to love our brother man for wherever they are at the moment, knowing that we're all on our own journey, on our own path, and it's all good. And if I step into my power in you, God, then I allow my brother to step in his power in you, and it's still all good because you're good. You're nothing but good, and we receive that goodness. We step in your power and your goodness and your love, and that's what we will experience today. Bless the airwaves and bless all that hear. And so it is. So, welcome, my guests. I am so excited to have all of you. I have Dr. Michelle Savico. I have, and she'll correct me, I have J.M. Rivas, and I have Dr. Guy Lynch. And I'm just going to do a little bio on each one of those and then allow each one of them to correct me if I've said anything wrong, because that's how we do it here, and so that you know a little about it. I'm going to start with Reverend Guy Lynch. He has been named the new senior minister of Unity of Beaverton, a Unity Church of Christianity located in downtown Beaverton, Oregon. Previously at Unity Church of Las Vegas, Reverend Lynch has a leadership calling, which is unique. It's a combination of dynamic spiritual teacher and grounded CEO. He also believes in a role of spiritual discourse beyond church on Sunday, which is awesome. To the end, he hosts his own weekly broadcast internet radio show, The Practical Christian, and maintains an active discussion with a global audience, by the way, at his blog and social media platforms. A common theme of his outreach is concepts of progressive Christianity, in contrast to the traditional view that Christianity is synonymous with conservative social and political views. And Michelle, I am so sorry about that. Please forgive me. Pronounce your last
what
name for me.
What did you do? Oh, Sabacco.
Sabacco, Michelle Sabacco. Reverend Dr. Michelle Sabacco, has an alternative ministry that is based in the Piedmont Triad area of North Carolina, but reaches out to people globally through spiritual support, mentoring, and a music ministry aspects of what she does, as well as through social media such as Facebook. And one of the many things that brings her joy is to help others define their mission, visions, and develop a spiritual guided strategic plan with the belief that we are all created equal. And in an attempt to follow the commandments that Jesus gave us, Michelle has an inclusive ministry that celebrates all loving paths, races, cultures, and is involved in most anything that supports equality on every level and those things that outwardly express loving God, our neighbors, and followers. And then I also have J.M. Rivas, and has been involved in the political mainstream for over 40 years as a consultant, activist, and campaign coordinator. He is from Detroit, Michigan, and is the owner of J.M. Productions, a company that produces videos and informational material for political campaigns and issues oriented around movements across the country. He has been involved in retail sales, internet, mass marketing, and served for 14 years as a department administrator in Michigan's third largest community, Warren. He is semi-retired now and devotes his time to bringing attention to social issues and political perspectives from both a spiritual and practical approach. Welcome, all of you. I'm so glad and so excited to have you all on the show.
Thank you.
And I'm kind of going to hand it over to Michelle to kind of talk to us about practical progressive Christianity, and we're going to go from one to the other, kind of like passing the ball along. So, Michelle, I'm passing the ball to you.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm going to be talking about how I combine my practical Christian principles with politics. So, first, to me, as a progressive practical Christian, in order to blend what I believe with my politics, I go to the scriptures that talk about what Jesus taught and modeled. So naturally, I go to the scriptures that deal with how he interacted with people, that speak to his views about being in relationships and what he preached or taught to get my guidance, because politics is about people. I ask myself, what were Jesus' main messages? Then I have to discern what are the things that are believed to actually been said by Jesus, and what are those things that others are saying about Jesus. Also, we have to remember that the Bible's been translated many times, and that there are over 50 different Bibles in English alone, each with their own sometimes subtle, sometimes not so subtle differences in wording. So once I do that, then I boil it down to, first, Jesus was loving and compassionate. He showed it in his relationships with people, as referenced in scriptures. He loved Peter, although Peter denied him. He loved Judas, even though Judas betrayed him. He showed his understanding of love with parables, such as the prodigal son and the good Samaritan. And while women and children were often treated as little more than animals, he included them. And then if those examples aren't enough, the commandments he gave us to live by, to love God, to love our neighbors and ourselves, fills in any gaps that there might be in the scriptures. The second thing is that Jesus was inclusive. He socialized, he ate with, he healed, whatever the occasion was. He included all people. And if you remember who some of the people were, they were some of the most unlikely people, a few of which I've already mentioned. So going back to the commandments he gave us, I can't help notice that when he says to love our neighbors, he doesn't say, but only if they look like this, only if they act like that, only if they have these beliefs, and so on. Third, again going back to the commandment to love, when I look at scriptures to see how often examples of how we're supposed to treat our neighbors show up, the Old Testament also serves as our history. So I might refer to that. And there are 95 passages that speak to how to treat the poor alone. A few examples of scriptures that address the poor, the hungry, the oppressed, and more are from Leviticus, which, by the way, is often used in a destructive way when not read in its entirety as the holiness code that it was meant to be. From passage 19:10, do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the alien. And from Deuteronomy 15:7, if there is a poor man among your brothers in any of the towns of the land that the Lord your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted toward your brother. And from the New Testament, a couple examples are one that most of you will probably recognize from Matthew. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. And from 1 John 16:18, we're told that we should lay down our life for our brothers. And if anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? And then continues with, dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth. So I'm especially reminded that being an expression of love has to go beyond what I'm saying to people and show up in what I'm doing. And further, does what I say and do contribute to being a part of the solution or part of the problem? Many of us that consider ourselves to be the body of Christ call each other brother and sister. So my next question then is, how are we treating our family? Are we remembering the words in Matthew 25 that go on to say, and when he was asked about this, he responded by saying, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. So bringing this all around into the politics part, I don't tell people who I think they should vote for, but I ask questions. And before I ask you, I ask myself. The questions include things like, how do you feel about feeding the hungry? How do you feel about providing shelter for the homeless? How do you feel about medical attention for everyone? How do you feel about our children being educated? Knowing that Jesus was inclusive, don't you believe that all should be treated equally and have equal rights? Those aren't questions that anyone's obligated to answer to me on. But to me, if you're a Christian, your answers to those questions have to be in keeping with what Jesus taught. So based on the answers to those questions, vote on the candidates locally, on the state level, and nationally that most represent your core values. And if your answers aren't in alignment with what you believe as a Christian that Jesus taught, then ask yourself why. Is it because there's something you're afraid of? For example, are you afraid that if we support those less fortunate, that we'll end up not having enough for ourselves? That there's not enough to share or to go around? Are you thinking of others as them and me, or them and us, rather than we? Remember, love casts out all fear. In other words, when you have love, there is no place for fear. One of my favorite songs when I was growing up was They'll know we are Christians by our love. So again, how are you treating others? And how is that going to show up when it's time to vote? Faith is important. Prayer is important. But as the African proverb says, when you pray, move your feet. It's not enough to just think about it, feel it, talk about it. You have to put those things in action. So now, with that said, I'm going to turn the program over to Reverend Guy, who will be sharing what it means to be issue-driven rather than promoting a particular candidate or party. Then JM will talk about how to find the proper mechanisms to voice your opinions in the political realm and how to support the informed choice after making it. So, Reverend Guy, unless Linda's got something she wants to interject,
no, we're just on. Passing the peace pipe. I see us passing
okay.
the peace
all right.
pipe.
All right. Well, you know, first of all, before I say anything else, I just want to say what a great scholarly dissertation Michelle just did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that in large part gets missing from those of us in the progressive movement. You know, it's almost like we've ceded scripture interpretation to the Christian right. And the focus of my program, The Practical Christian, and the upcoming Practical Christian Network, is in taking back the idea of Christianity from those that I feel have, and I believe that many others feel, have misrepresented Christianity and perverted it. The biggest issue for me, and, you know, people will tell you, I'm a little controversial this way, and I take very strong stands in this sense, that Christianity should not be standing for bludgeoning people with we're right and you're wrong. The Christian right has basically hijacked the idea of Christianity and said that we have the one and only interpretation of Scripture. And yet Michelle just did this wonderful job showing how the scriptures she was reading are talking about caring for the least of these. It's about the upliftment of people and not the diminishment of them. And so some of the things that occur on my show, and I am like Michelle in that I never tell people how to vote or what candidate to vote for. But I believe that it is within the purview of churches. I believe it's in the purview of any religious organization to take stands on particular issues. I have no problem. And by the way, I don't have a problem with anything anybody believes. In other words, I don't have a salvation theology that says that you have to be saved by the blood of Jesus Christ or that you have to perform particular rituals in order for something good to happen in your life or to make it into heaven or anything like that. But the fact that if you do have that salvation theology, I do not have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is if you're trying to inflict that theology on others. And so being issues-driven means that whenever I see someone trying to inflict religion upon other people and say, I have the right way, you have the wrong way, therefore I need to force this upon you, that is when I feel that some of us need to step in and say, no, that's not true, that there are different interpretations and people have different paths to God. One of the things that happens at my church every Sunday morning is a statement of inclusion of all religions around the world that say that there are many paths to God, that yes, perhaps there is one truth, but none of us really know the totality of that truth. We're all seekers from that standpoint, and those that say that they have the absolute truth, you can count on that they don't. You can count on the fact that they don't have an absolute truth. We're all seeking that truth. We're seeking to align ourselves with God principles as we understand God principles. So one of my favorite phrases these days is that we have, while we have religious freedom in this country, the freedom of your religion is much like the freedom of your fist, and the freedom of your fist ends at the tip of my nose. So that's what it means to be issues-driven from the perspective of practical Christianity, at least as it's being defined on my program and in this particular movement. many of the issues that we address are, or I should say include, the issues of the homosexual community and the inclusion of the homosexual community in spiritual life, in religious life. I'm very proud of the fact that my church now has a sign on the street that says, all are welcome, LGBT friendly and accepting, LGBT being the new vernacular for the homosexual community. You are welcome in my church, and you will be treated with courtesy and the respect that is due every individual in that church. The only thing that pains me about it is the fact that I have to put up a sign like that, because it should be a natural thing for all churches to be welcoming of seekers into their church. We also take on issues such as women's rights and equality in all areas there. We take on issues that are infringing upon other people's freedom of religion. For example, I had a program this past yesterday, in which we talked about the whole anti-Islam film that sparked violence in Libya. And that resulted in people being killed. This is an unconscionable way for clergy to behave. Taking on and saying that someone else's religion is bad is not not the position that we should be taking. The position we should be taking is the affirming of the teaching that we have and the good that it can do in the world, the upliftment of the least of these. So the idea of the movement of practical Christianity is to start to move in a way that uplifts all the causes of progressive Christianity and progressive religions around the world, not just Christianity. So while we teach that every person is a unique expression of God created with sacred worth, living from an awareness that transforms life in the world, we don't insist that you believe in anything particular that we teach, but only that you respect the fact that this is what we believe. So with that, I'll be glad to pass. I tend to get passionate about these things, so I'm going to calm down here and pass to JM.
Well, thank you, Guy. Very well said. And allow me, before I begin, to say how thrilled and honored I am to be on this program with two of the most influential people for me in my spiritual journey over the years. My background was a little bit somewhat different in the fact that I began with secular activism, political activism, and recently have come to a new awareness that my spiritual awareness and my political movement and my political philosophy does not have to be in contradiction. We have been kind of, as Guy alluded to, we've been kind of hijacked in this thinking that we are not supposed to get involved, not supposed to be this, not supposed to be that. We're to let someone else do it for us. And if I bring anything to the program, I would hope it would be to give everyone some practical spiritual motive and application towards how to best serve your voice and best be heard on the issues that you have without betraying the very nature of your spiritual awareness. It's very important to me. We talk about things like promoting and sharing. Politics and activism and social awareness is not a very lazy, it can be a very lazy activity. It should not be. And we tend to sit back sometimes and say, let someone else do it, let someone else promote it. And that allows us to be easily hijacked, both by the fundamental right, whether it be political right or religious right. And then in situations like that, we lose our ability to stand up, to be counted, and to, as Guy said and Michelle said, promote the fact that we have a voice. So I'm very happy to be here, and hopefully as we go through the program, we can talk about, once you've determined the issues in your life or the issues that are important to you, how can you make a difference in this political quagmire that people are so frightened of right now? You know, I can understand people basically with the contentiousness that has been bandied about in all of the social media and social blogs and social awareness, that utter frustration that they are powerless to actually stand up and disagree or stand up and make a statement of another kind. And I think that that's what we need to do. We need to do it in a short term because we have a very short period of time here until there will be a major election. And issues will be decided that you have that are going to affect you, yours, your family for the next 4 years and perhaps much longer than that. And also, we need to be looking at the long term and realize that political movements are exactly that. They are movements, and they can take place, and your contribution can be valued the day after the election, even if the elections don't always go the way that you want. And the last thing that I'm very passionate about myself is to try to make people aware of the fact that all politics is local. Speaking from a purely political point of view, all politics is local. It belongs, it begins in your backyard. It begins in the way you express these things. And I believe that spirituality has that same issue. All spirituality, it becomes local. It's how you relate to the people in your world, not how people tell you to relate or tell you what to do. It's how you relate on a one-to-one basis. Given that, you would be surprised at how impactful change can be. So with that, I will throw it open and give it back to Michelle, and we can have a discussion.
Okay.
Well, I'll play
Michelle?
Hot potato and throw it back to Linda.
Okay.
Hey, Linda, I'll give it to you.
Okay, and it sounds all good. And I'm kind of bringing it back full circle because for some of my listening audience, we may need to even go back to, and I'm going to throw it out, and whoever feels like they have the answer or if we all want to share, what is practical progressive Christianity? Let's take it back to the base level so that we all come with a real good understanding of what that is.
Well, I'll jump in
God.
since practical Christianity is the name of my show. I guess I should have some kind of answer there.
Sounds good.
But, you know, the focus is on the teachings of Jesus Christ as opposed to the religion that has been created around Jesus Christ. Practical Christianity is based on the teachings and how the teachings of Jesus Christ can be applied to enhance everyday life. We regard Jesus in our belief system as the highest example of the manifestation of the perfect God idea of a human being, which is called the Christ. Christ wasn't his last name. This was actually a name given to him, comes from the Greek Christos, and the Hebrews called that their Messiah. And so we think by following these teachings, we endeavor to bring love and understanding and respect and service. We ensure our lives we believe that this is the best way to achieve joy and great abundance, health, wonderful, loving relationships. But it is, again, as I'll reiterate, it is not intent on converting people from a religion that brings them comfort. We regard ourselves more as a spirituality of attraction rather than a religion of conversion. So we understand there's varying views on salvation. I mentioned that earlier. But what we do is we intend to honor all the differences. But we challenge, what practical Christianity does do is challenge those who are exclusive of life differences in their own Christian teachings. And our mission and our policies are designed in part to continually challenge the teachings for her to be Christian that don't seem to be in keeping with the teachings of Jesus Christ. And it was Jesus Christ who, the people that Jesus Christ had the most problem with were religious leaders. He had more problems with clergy than he ever did with people. And he dined, and he preferred the company of people of ill that were considered of ill repute. So what does that tell you? Well, what we may want to transfer to our modern time is that we need to be suspicious of those who say they have the only way. So in a nutshell, I would say that is what practical Christianity stands for. Now, from a progressive standpoint, I'll throw that back to Michelle. What do you think, Michelle?
Well, I think progressive is, you know, just as the name implies, progressive is making progress. And we feel like by being active, by practicing the things, you know, again, by the very nature of the name, being practical, that means practicing. So when we practice these things that Jesus taught and he modeled, then we're able to be progressive. We progress on our journey. And the way that I personally discern the things that I'm going to align myself with in terms of the teachings and examples are, again, going back to the scriptures having to do with love. If I put this into practice, if I take this scripture and I hold this up to somebody else and say, this is what I believe God wants, this is what I believe Jesus wants, it's going to be something that's going to be loving, compassionate, that's going to lift me up and hopefully lift other people up in the process, and it's going to be constructive. But a lot of times we hear other Christians that are using scriptures in a way that don't feel like they're being very compassionate. They don't feel loving, and they feel more destructive than constructive. And
you know what that sounds like to me, Michelle, if I can jump back in here for just a minute. It sounds like what you're saying there is that the life that you live needs to be consistent with what you teach.
Yes, it does. Yes.
And see, that's where I think that, you know, it's one thing to say that God is love. It's one thing to read a scripture about God being loving or Jesus being loving or anything like that. You know, I had this one experience. I'm just going to throw a real short story in here. I had a receiving line after a church service one day, and I had a woman with a child in hand who came up to me and said, oh, Reverend Guy, you know, I just loved it when you talked about God as love and Jesus being loving. And then she looked at her child, grabbed his hand and said, get over here. So, you know, it's that consistency thing. That's that issue for all of us in our lives. That's my point. I'm sorry to jump in there with that story, but I had to get that in.
No, I love it because it makes it spontaneous, and that's what I want it to be, because really it is about us practicing what we preach, walking the talk, pretty much, as we say.
Right.
It is, and it's also about keeping it real. There are some people that feel like that if they're being spiritual, that what's theirs to do is to just sit and pray, and, you know, and pray that God's going to be in charge, which we know God is in charge, and but that that's all that's theirs to do. They're just going to pray about it or affirm what they know to be true. And I don't think that, you know, that that's enough. I think, of course, prayer is wonderful. I did my dissertation on prayer. But I think there has to be the action. Like I mentioned earlier, I always go back to that African proverb, when you pray, move your feet, which I've also heard in Shaker realms talked about too, that there has to be that action that goes along with it, and it has to be a action that's consistent with what you're saying. You can't be preaching one thing and saying one thing, but then doing something else. That's not in alignment.
I would like to
Sorry, go ahead, J.M.
Well, I just wanted to, something struck me that both Guy and Michelle mentioned, and especially Michelle when she talked about keeping it real. And from, you know, a political standpoint, spiritual, I'm not qualified to speak on the varying interpretations that people have. In my own awareness, I was always instructed in studying the life of Jesus biblically that what a activist he was, mm-hmm. and how real he really was. We seem to have this opinion sometimes that our model or our leader or our worship, however you view these wise lessons or these lessons, that they are in some kind of a case. He was extremely active towards helping the poor. He had to put up with the constant insults and slights of his own superiors, if you would say, his own religious leaders, his own followers. He was definitely walking to the point of walking and talking the talk and talking about forgiveness and forgiveness under adversity. I think Guy alluded to that a little bit earlier. And I have always been struck with the fact that if you wanted an example of what real involvement from a spiritual and a political point of view is this is someone or some actions that could honestly are down at home and can take very, very important lessons from, regardless of how you interpret all of the other avenues towards religion and what your particular belief of religion is. You need but look at the stories to understand how dedicated he was to that principle. And could we do any less?
I think that's really good, because really he was, and he was a traveling, practicing, out amongst the people, very hands-on, if you really study him, and a revolutionary of his time that really changed the whole world. So kind of not the go-along, get-along kind of, you know, Christian per se.
No, and the example that I love is because there were times, you know, when he lays his head down and even speaking from this particular being a Christian, but there are examples of this that exist in all of the religions, putting his head down and wondering if, thinking if this was all, you know, if he was going the right way, if going the right direction. And we do that ourselves. In the civil rights movement, there must have been many times when people laid their heads down and said, this is never going to happen, this is never going to work. Yet it worked. And it worked because people followed that example and were persistent in their belief and following what they believed. So I'm very, very kind of attuned to that particular aspect of interrelationship and discussion. So, yes,
I was just going to jump in. You know, I had there was a famous priest in Detroit. His name was Father Cunningham. Do you remember him?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Okay. Well, I met with Father Cunningham, and we were going to become friends. This was 2 weeks before he actually died, and we were talking to each other and about Jesus, and we were discussing our differences, our theological differences, and he looked at me and he said, "You're very enamored with the humanness of Jesus." And he says, "I'm very enamored with the divinity of Jesus." And I thought he defined that very well. It's mm-hmm. almost like he's saved by the divinity of Jesus, and I'm saved by Jesus' humanity. Mm-hmm. Because it was Jesus' humanity that gives me hope that I can come up higher. So I just wanted to throw that in, because I think it
very
relates
good.
To what
yes.
you were saying there. He's
Absolutely.
A very real person. He's a very authentic person. And he liked the company of real people as opposed to pious people. And he always warned about, you know, beware of those who stand on the street corners and pray so that everybody sees them.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Very good point. Yes. Yes. And,
really,
and,
really.
And yes, that I feel the same way when I began to look at the stories and the parables in terms of that human experience, what he was experiencing, most definitely it gives you another point of view towards his divinity and towards where it was coming from for him.
Right.
And yet he did things that, you know, went against the grain. He gave alms to the poor. He helped the downtrodden. He, as you said before, he ate with the different people and different situations. And so all of this, you know, plays into how our justification for being spiritually active and understanding that the social issues are important to us. We may not be able to solve all of them. He wasn't able in his time to solve them, but he was pretty sure it was going to get there. And that's my opinion. This is just my interpretation now. But, you know, that gives you hope. That gives you, to me, that gave me hope, and that we can make a difference, that we can very often make a difference in the world.
Well, it does give me hope. And to me, his humanity points me toward his divinity, because it
Absolutely.
Humbles me to know that he was human yet divine, and it's his humanness that I so connect to. But when I connect to that humanness, then I open up myself to his divineness.
Mm-hmm.
Well said.
Very good point.
Well, we're going just keeping it moving. We kind of talked about this, but I'll throw that out for whoever takes up the peace pipe, as I'm calling it. What are some of the principles of progressive Christianity? And we've kind of talked about it, but if there's anything that we haven't went over, whoever wants to take the peace pipe, go for it.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll tell you that what I will admit to is this is a very dynamic situation with this movement. And one of the things that I really like about it is that it draws to it people who are open to change and are open to questioning. You know, even though we might establish a principle here and say that we believe this or we believe that, it's a dynamic that is constantly changing. But one of the things that has come up recently for me and in relationship to my radio program, in relationship to the web ministry, is, you know, a woman named Carol, who Michelle knows, who has been helping us to define ourselves as a movement. She said something very good about being that perhaps we should be more concerned with the fruit of our speech than with the freedom of our speech.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it just strikes home with me. When we're dealing with some of the things that the Christian right does. And it also brings up a question for me. And, you know, Linda, forgive me, I'm going to direct it at J.M. if that's okay.
Oh, please, go for it. It's free flowing.
Okay, you know, because something that happens for me in my show and some of my Facebook pages is people will question how, you know, I can say, you know, how are you loving when, perhaps, you know, with my passion, sometimes it may seem like I'm attacking or certainly confronting people whose behavior I think is not manifesting in a loving way themselves. So, you know, how do you maintain the idea that you are in keeping with the teachings of Jesus Christ that say love one another, and yet confront people when it seems that their behaviors are contrary to those teachings and or causing harm to others. JM, how would you address that?
Well, there was a time when I would have said, well, you have to be confrontational, you have to stand up, you have to call out those issues. And I think you do an excellent job of up on the Practical Christian Radio Show and on your Facebook blog. And Michelle, the same thing, because both of you are very direct at stating your opinions and how you believe without that necessarily in-your-face type attitude. You are right. You have the right as a person in the United States of America to think what you want on your own personal issue, the way
right.
you handle it. Now, I think that we work under those paradigms of seeking agreement and showing your commitment. I think the very important thing is to show your commitment and when someone stands up. I mean, if we're using the lessons of Jesus, you know, he did turn over the temple tables.
Yes, he did.
And he had to make a point, and he felt he had to make a point, and probably the single point responsible for his what was to follow in his picture. But at some point in time, you have to stand up. Does not mean you have to do this in a hateful, angry, or hostile way, even though that is oftentimes exhibited to you. It just means that there is nothing wrong with someone from a political standpoint being direct and standing up to show their different point of view or their point of view. It is for the person to accept it or deny it. But occasionally, you have to call it out. Injustice has to be called out. If injustice is not called out, it will fester and it will take over your entire country, the entire thing. Now, what is injustice, I know, is a relative term on both sides. But I have my opinion of injustice. You have yours. Michelle has hers. And the more people that listen to different opinions, the more minds will open up. And then those decisions will be, if nothing more, I think they'll become more in agreement with each other, and we'll get beyond all of this political wrangling that is responsible from politicians, both on the left and right, to exploit. Politicians don't lead. Politicians follow. They sniff the wind, and when they see an opportunity, they're going to take advantage. So I think that standing up, I'm a believer in the same with Reverend Savako. I think that standing up for issues and saying, well, this is how I feel about it, that opens up that dialogue. And that makes it, yes, sometimes it may get some contentions, or other people may feel threatened. I think one of the biggest issues is more people feeling threatened because we're taught peace, we're taught love, we're taught not to, and those are what we're aiming for. It's not that we're trying to teach something different. I'm not talking for you or for Michelle, but I'm not trying to teach somebody anything different. I'm trying to get there with the right of everyone else to have the same rights.
And if I can jump in for a second, I think you were talking about peace and kind of, you know, being quiet about it and things like that. What I've realized over many years is that if I don't stand up for what I believe, if I hear somebody say something or I see somebody do something and I don't call them on it, then it's just like I'm saying, well, that's okay, or I agree with you. And the last thing I want to do is give permission to say or do something that's going to hurt somebody else on any level. So it's important to talk about it, and I think one of the most important things, though, is, and I'll go back to Guy for this one because it's kind of his rule on the Practical Christian page, the radio group page, and the SAN page, that you can say, you know, whatever you want in discussion. You don't have to agree with everything. That's not the purpose. But whatever you're going to say needs to be respectful. And I do think, you know, that we can call people to task and do that in a respectful way. Loving you doesn't mean that I'm always going to agree with everything that you say and do. You know, that's two totally separate things.
That is. And loving you doesn't mean that I can't question your beliefs either. Because sometimes I think for some Christians to question,
absolutely,
you know, a foundational belief is like you're sacrilegious. But to question doesn't mean I don't love. It means I question you about that.
Well, I had somebody that wanted to get into a debate or a discussion about something the other day, and I wasn't going to debate it or discuss it because my mind basically was already made up. And I knew that wasn't going to get anywhere for either of us. So then the person said that I was closed-minded because I wasn't willing to do that. And I thought about it a little while, and then I responded that there's a difference of being closed-minded and convicted. And just because I'm not willing to sit there and listen to you, tell me, you know, how you're going to justify what you're saying and doing, doesn't mean that I'm closed-minded about it. It probably means that I've heard it all before. I'm not going there with you. I've already got my convictions, and I'm going to stand in that truth.
Well, I think that you're touching on something very important, and I would add to that that what occurs with people who are very skilled at directing conversations in a direction that they want it to go is that they get very skilled at what I call circular conversation, which basically means that no matter they won't acknowledge any point that you make, but they'll just move to their own next point and sling the mud the way that they keeps you on the defensive all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're constantly having to explain yourself. And that's where I try to draw the line. I say, okay, I'm not interested in circular conversation. Intelligent people can always beg a question. I can do that too. I know how to beg a question, and I can keep a conversation going forever by just continually begging a question. What I want on my radio program and what I want on my Facebook pages is an intent to agree. It doesn't mean that we will agree, but that we have an intent to agree so that we're not just constantly going back and forth and back and forth. At a certain point, we may have to understand that we're not going to agree and the conversation needs to come to an end, because the only thing left to do is be discourteous with each other.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's really good. I'm going to kind of get to some of the issues that I wanted to talk about, because we really have gone over, to me, a lot of the basis of what progressive Christianity and practical Christianity is. Maybe we haven't really talked about, it seems to me that a lot at some point it has to do sometimes with spiritual activism. It's what I call spiritual activists.
Mm-hmm.
Does either one of you, and we've kind of touched on that, but any one of you want to briefly talk about that, and then we'll kind of get into the issues, because we got 37 minutes, and I want to at least address some of the issues that are important.
Well, I'll take a little bit of the lead here just for a short moment and just say that I believe this is why these movements are starting to be created. You know, there are all kinds of Facebook pages out there that are lending themselves to supporting causes. You know, the Christian left, it just seemed to me that the Christian left and Occupy Wall Street seemed to happen almost simultaneously. That said, that, you know, Wall Street is crushing our country, and yet it's 98% of us that are living below that of the 2%. The Christians are tired of being misrepresented. The Jesus Loves Gays group, the Unfundamentalists, the Affirming Baptists are all about taking the lead on issues such as the homosexual community and the denial of their rights, the denial of equal marriage. And Michelle can speak to the group that is called Until All Can Wed. And it seems to me that what's developing now is a dynamic toward really real activism on the part of progressive Christians. What do you think, Michelle?
Oh, I do. I was trying to think of some of the other groups while you were talking, like More Like Presbyterians and
mm-hmm.
some other ones like that too. But yes, definitely on the on equality issues. And it's like, well, you know, we had civil rights about 50 years ago, but all of the civil rights haven't been addressed yet. And so marriage equality in general is still a big issue. And, you know, there again, when I talk about this, and I am active in this and co-admin a group that was started by Reverend Mark Sandlin, who made a commitment a year ago May to not sign any more marriage certificates. He'll still do a ceremony, but he won't do the legal document until all can wed. So there's a page based on that. There's also a short video. But again, we find that people most often go back to scriptures to support their beliefs in inequality. And, you know, one fact is that this, to me, is not a church issue. There's a separation of church and state, and that it should be, in my mind, left up to the individual denominations, the churches, the ministers, you know, just as now there are still couples that are interracial couples that aren't allowed to get married in one or the other of their churches and have to go to another church or have a civil ceremony. You know,
yeah,
so
I was just going to say, race is not done either. You know,
it's not.
Racism has raised its ugly head again. Yeah, so
yeah.
Good point, Michelle, and I didn't mean
to
interrupt
you.
So
we can't force, you know, ministers and congregations to accept people in their congregations getting married and that. But on the civil level, which is what this is, there's nothing much more heartbreaking than having a couple that have been together for 25, as much as 40 and 50 years. One of them gets sick, has to go to the hospital, and the family of that person doesn't allow their partner to come visit them for whatever reason. And they have no rights to do that. They don't have any of the other rights that are allowed by our civil laws, our federal laws, state laws, and things like that. None of those are in place for the partners of these people. And so, again, we've got people going back to scriptures and making their decisions and their choices, you know, based on that. And often they use Leviticus. And they use that to support the idea that a gay relationship's an abomination. How often have we heard that one? But I think there's a couple things that people have to keep in mind. The first thing is that when that was written, it reflected the culture at that time. And there are some words that, according to scholars, that have been mistranslated or that have different meanings now than they did then. The second thing is that if you're going to take a couple particular scriptures out of context to support what you believe, then what about the rest of them? And I know you've all heard these examples about eating shellfish and wearing clothes with more than one fiber. And, you know, if you've done those things, you're an abomination. And
that's
many
right.
of those things.
I just got my hair cut, and that does me. And I got my hair cut.
That's an abomination,
today,
too, yeah.
right.
And many aren't followed anymore because people, different denominations, have realized that they're outdated. And for the people that think that once it's written, it can't change, what does that say about, you know, the idea when you read that you can sell your daughter or that if your daughter is raped, she has to marry the rapist? So I think you can see where I'm going with this. And in the New Testament, in Luke, Jesus defines the love of money as an abomination to God. And in Revelation 21:27, it says that anyone that practices an abomination won't get into heaven. So what about all those people that put making money ahead of everything else? Apparently, it's not just by grace, by what you do. And to take everything literally would be like me saying, Linda Muhammad really put her foot in her mouth, and then having somebody 2,000 or 5,000 years from now taking that literally. So we've got to go back and see, what did the words really mean? An example.
Well, this is radio. She may actually have
her
foot in her mouth. We don't know.
No.
Well, for some people, they probably will feel.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is a safe place for different views. And, you know, I'm from the South, so, you know, my grandmother says, baby, you can go to the smorgasbord, but you don't have to eat everything on the plate. So you can view all of it. You can look at it. You can smell it and enjoy it with all your senses, but you take what works for you. And that's kind of how I view a lot of things in life. So,
I think one of the biggest problems that we end up with is that people don't have open minds, open hearts. They won't listen. They've already made up their mind about what they believe, and they don't want to hear anything else about it. They're not willing to go to that buffet, and see what all is there and then make their choice. They keep going to the same restaurant and ordering the same meal.
Yes. It was somebody that was going to say something. And
yes, I just wanted real quick something that Michelle had alluded to, and I just wanted to take a minute to, because it is at the crux of what my mission has become somewhat, and that is the difference between the political agenda and the spiritual agenda. When we start talking about changing the Constitution of the United States, when we start reading things into our laws, both at a level of local levels, national levels, when we start doing that, it's one thing to, as much as I am opposed to it, if someone has a personal prejudice about gay and lesbian, they have that personal prejudice. I will argue with them and pray with them as much as possible. However, when you want to write it into the Constitution of the United States, where does that stop? Where does it stop with rights? Where does it, okay, we write them out. We make them difficult. And now we move on to something else. So there is a big difference here between what you may spiritually be working through and dealing with and what is legal. There is a reason why there is a separation of church and state. And I think sometimes some of these issues, when you look at them, they are blatantly unconstitutional. They are blatantly. But if we allow them to start moving and jaking and mending and adding and poking, we've already done this at the local level, and it's already caused consternation and difficulties. But if you continue to do that because you think you're right, then the Constitution really becomes exactly what you feared, useless. It's there to guarantee everyone. That's my soapbox, and I'll get off of it now.
Well, JM knows how to say it, doesn't he? He got it right. Exactly so.
Well, I'm just going to just kind of throw the issues out there a little bit, and you guys chime in or take in what you kind of feel like works, that you have a lot to say on that issue. We're going to talk about gun control and how, as a practical progressive Christian, you feel about that, and I'm putting it out there for whoever to take up the handle as they will.
We've sure had the discussion about this, haven't we? I have taken the stance, and I without apology, that I will no longer discuss whether or not we should have gun control anymore. I will be glad to discuss what kind of gun control we have, but not whether we have it. It's kind of like climate control. We know it exists now. We know that this country has a problem with the lack of gun control. We know that this country has a problem with the NRA being this huge lobby that controls Congress. So it's not about whether we need gun control, it's what kind. It is clear from the discussions that I've had, not only on the radio program, but, oh, gosh, Facebook discussions ad nauseum, that countries that have much stricter gun control laws have less gun deaths. And it was pointed out to me by someone from the United Kingdom who said, when we do have a gun death, the gun came from the United States. So it's quite clear now that, you know, if we believe, and, you know, we can take it literally, we can take it figuratively, we can take it metaphorically, but the commandment is thou shalt not kill. Well, we need to take a stand on those things that help people kill. And people say, oh, they're just going to find another way to do it. They'll use a knife. They'll do this. Well, you know what? I'll take my chances with a knife because over a semi-automatic with a magazine that goes on, it seems, into infinity. There's just absolutely no conscience behind putting weapons in the hands of people that – it's almost like we don't have a background check anymore because you can buy guns at flea markets and nobody's checking anything. We say we have these laws in the books, but there are so many loopholes in it. And we see quite clearly that the most disturbed individuals in our society are obtaining these guns and walking into movie theaters of all places, places that we feel like we most certainly are safe here, and are mowing people down. So other than that, I really don't have an opinion on the subject.
Didn't you
take that opinion
and do something with it?
Say again?
Like pretty recently?
Well, we did. Michelle just, you know, she really corners me on this. But we put together a petition that called for a ban on semi-automatic weapons. And I don't know how many signatures we have now, but we have, you know, we've taken that active thing, you know, for whatever signatures we get, we have taken that active step. And it's really one of the first active, practical Christian steps that we've taken, Michelle. And I'm glad for it. You know, regardless of what the result is, I'm glad that we decided together, and it was really between the three of us that we came up with the language for it, and Michelle had the technological wizardry to actually get the petition on our Facebook pages. So yes, we're taking action on that very topic.
And it is on change.org. And so I will be glad to try to track down that link later and send that to you, Linda.
Okay, and once I get the link, I'll put it on my message board for those, and you can put it on my Facebook page, Soul in the City,
okay,
which is really my Facebook page, and a lot of the listeners do, message me and that kind of thing or see things. So it'll be on both, and anybody that hits my message will, you know, I'll have the link available to you. So that would be good. And I personally want to sign. I just feel like there is a lot going on in my community as a black woman, that as a mom first, as an aunt and as a sister, there's a lot of black young men that are dying because of that. And I just feel like I have to step up to the plate to make sure I sign. And I encourage, you know, mothers. You know, too many mothers are going to their children's funeral.
And I would encourage all of your listeners who are interested in this subject to take a moment and to research the fact that there have been gun control legislation proposed, there are restrictions proposed. Your legislatures were trying to do the same thing, trying to seek an agreement and come to a mutually beneficial idea which restricts these guns without necessarily blanketly threatening everyone else from taking their guns away or whatever their methodology is. These bills have been in Congress, but all of a sudden some of our politicians have developed a just say no attitude towards everything. So there's no compromise. Things are sometimes done in baby steps. So we need to emphasize that. We need to let people know that they should find out exactly what the gun control legislation that was killed by the Congress earlier this year entailed, and so that they can decide for themselves and make this and realize and get these politicians rolling on, like as Guy said, not arguing about whether we should have it or not, but what's the best way to do it.
And by the way, this brings us right back to the whole issues-driven idea. You know, when Congress and legislatures and politicians of all sorts get it that we're active, that we're paying attention to what they're doing, they will respond to that. There is no question that they will respond. We've seen this before, that they will actually respond to that. And, you know, and this is a final point on the whole issues-driven topic, is that, you know, even though Michelle and I will not tell you who to vote for, it doesn't mean that we won't make great efforts to see to it that you vote, that we should be involved in voter registration drives, get as many people voting as possible, because the more people vote, the better direction this country goes. The more people are active and paying attention to the issues, the better the direction of the country goes. This is Guy Lynch's opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
Well, let's talk about women's rights, you know, which personally for me, I want equal pay for the job that I do. I want the right to choose. Can you imagine that? I would want that. I want the right to choose what is done with my body. So I'm putting the pipe out there again. Somebody take it up.
Oh, I think Michelle's got to take this one.
Me? Just because I'm sexist.
I keep jumping in here. I think this one's yours. I don't think I want to speak for women at this point.
How about you, JM? You haven't talked much.
Oh, I've never embarrassed to speak for anybody. So usually until they tell me to shut up. I will say this from a political standpoint is that, there's a lot of talk about the war on women and a lot of nomenclature that is thrown back and forth. But I think as a voting member of the United States of America, I think all women need to take a fresh look at what is being bandied about. Now, I am a man, and I have my prejudices. I understand this. I don't expect any woman to take what I say verbatim. The war that is being touted is simply it's more of a police action to contain and restrain. And so consequently, you pay 30% more for your health care premiums than a man does. You don't get equal pay. But what happens with all of these is that it starts out with the most, newsworthy sensationalism concerning abortion rights and reproductive rights. And what this is happening here to women, all I would say is whatever, I'm not advocating one point or another, but you need to look at what's going on at your local state levels. You need to understand that some 135 states, in 2005, 34 states passed restrictive abortion laws. In 2011, there were 92. In the first half of those 92 were in 24 different states, and in 2012 there were 39. Now, this again, it may sound I'm not advocating pro or against, but what I'm saying is that when those are medical benefits, those are medical rights, and when I take those away, when I get everyone agreeing to that, then I can take other things away, like your health premium or like your ability to have pap smears or all of these things that women and men do on a basis of, for their health. So it starts with the big sensational thing, which everybody would, can be, like Guy said, talking in a circular vein and just continue to do it. But when you look a little bit deeper at what can happen here, then I think that I would hope that I have great confidence in the women electorate of the country that they're going to realize that this political agenda that is fostered needs to be really inspected before you make that decision. If you can get people to vote against their own interest and against the interest of their families and their friends and their lives, if you can get them to vote that, and which shows no benefit but a fear of lack, well, then you've really become a pretty consummate manipulator. Like Guy said, able to turn every conversation into that. So while we may be very divided on pro or anti-abortion, we may not be so divided on the legal necessity to enact these things. It may sound very moralistic, but it then trickles down into other realms. So there's plenty of information out there about the lack of pay, the discrimination. The argument about family values require women to be in a certain stereotypical role. It doesn't seem to require men to be that way. But that's for every individual to look at and then to make their decision on the politician that they're going to support or the agenda that they're going to support.
Well, now I'm going to jump in for a minute.
Okay.
There's a couple things that you mentioned. The first was you said pro-abortion or against abortion, and rather than pro-choice. And I think that's one of the distinctions that we're learning is that people think that if you're pro-choice, it means you're pro-abortion. And it's like I've never met a woman, honestly, that was pro-abortion. But there are cases where it's necessary for one reason or another. There are states that if a woman's raped and has a child, that the father of that child has the same rights as any other biological parent would have. Can you imagine putting your child and yourself through that after experiencing that? And when you talk about the people that we elect, it reminded me of, hopefully some of, I'm not the only one with this experience, but I had a parent that liked the phrase, when they would get upset, that said, I brought you into this world, I can take you out. And you got to remember that the same applies to the people that represent us. That I've read that 68% of the voters in a particular area when surveyed said that they would support pro-choice, but the person that represents them is an ultra-conservative that consistently votes against it. So if you're the people that are serving you aren't voting in a way that really reflect what you believe as an individual and collectively, take them out. Put somebody in that does.
Yes, you're not talking.
I'm going to pretend like I'm J.M. Rivas here for just a second. Say that.
Good luck with that, guy.
I know, right? I'm going to say that one of the things that I think we really have to pay attention to, regardless of what the issue is, and certainly women's rights in particular, is that, you know, it's not enough to vote in a presidential election. You have to vote in midterms. You have to vote locally. You have to vote in your municipalities. We're going to have to become more civic-minded in this country, it seems to me, if we are going to advance an agenda that is more inclusive, as a practical Christian would. A practical Christian embraces and includes everyone, and most certainly that includes half of our population that are called women, maybe more than half. But it means that we're going to have to be much, much, much more active in all elections and not just a presidential one.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in the matter of women's rights, just like anything else, who do you want determining those rights? It isn't about that issue. That issue is a separate issue, pro-abortion, anti-abortion, pro-choice life. We can discuss that. But the issue is who do you want deciding your medical care? And that comes down to the very basic answer. And like you say, if we don't know that, realize that it comes down at the local level, that it involves, you know, this kind of bubbles up, these taking away of these rights and responsibilities. I doubt very seriously you'd have many male members of Congress willing to give up anything in terms of how they would determine their medical history. And yet...
Well, and isn't it interesting, too, J.M., that the decisions that are being made about women's bodies are all being made by men?
Absolutely.
That's one of the most stark things. Women are not getting elected into office as often. They're not running as often. I think they're going to become very aware, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michelle or Linda, you're becoming aware right now how necessary it's going to be to elect women and or sensitive men into these positions that understand the positions that that women can be in regard to their health.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to have to become way more civic-minded, I think.
I agree.
I think our country is moving to that. We cannot be uneducated on the issues and the agendas, and there's no excuse because of the vast amount of knowledge, if you get on the web or whatever, there's a lot of information. You sometimes have to sift through that, but it's worth your time to be educated on the issues that are important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So I have 10 minutes left on the program, and I want to allow each of you to have some final thoughts, keeping in mind about the 10 minutes, of course. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. But first, I just want to tell people or just kind of get out there about whatever the issue that is important to you, you have to vote. And, people have died. People have fought. And it's an issue for me that is very dear to heart that you can't complain. You can't do anything if you didn't vote. To me, just be quiet. You know, we have to vote. So I'm going to start by saying that. And then I'm going to pass it on to Michelle. Any final thoughts?
Well, just in terms of voting and making your decisions, don't ever just be comfortable thinking, well, this candidate's a shoo-in. The polls are saying he's leading by 8% or 10%, so I don't have to take the time off of work or whatever. Find a ride over to vote. Make it a priority, because if you just sit there and do something, you could wake up the next morning and whoever it is that you'd like to see in office, it may be the other person. So like Linda said, you know, people have died and fought so that we would be able to live in a democracy where we would be able to vote and every vote would count. And, you know, so do take advantage of that. And there is still time to register.
And I would add to that that, the majority, is my belief that the majority of people get it right. When the majority votes, they get it right. The problem is when the majority doesn't vote.
Mm-hmm.
So the more people that vote, we'll get it right if we can get the most people out to vote. And I think we're going to have to really concentrate on that in the coming years to make sure that everybody has the right to vote, that is qualified under our current rules. We have to get past this voter suppression called voter ID. That's a misnomer. It's voter suppression. It's Jim Crow laws coming back to haunt us. So we're going to really have to focus on getting the majority of people to vote.
Yes.
Well, JM, it's on you.
Well, you know, yes. I got sidetracked for a moment there with the voter suppression laws, but here's some things that you can do. Make your choices about what your issues are and how you feel. Do something that people can do immediately. Call your local Secretary of State's office or your city clerk. Get a list of the ballot proposals and the ballots that you're going to be faced with when you come to vote. Make sure that you get to go down the list, and if you have a particular issue that's near and dear to your heart, speak up. Talk. Don't be embarrassed. Call them. Ask them how they stand on a particular issue. If they sidetrack it, give you mealy-mouthed excuses, don't vote for them. Even though you may be the only person in the community not voting for them, be that way. And realize that your vote is private once you go into the room. So consequently, you can take immediate action by becoming aware of the people who are going to be standing for election, whether it's your city councilman, whether it's your mayor, whether it's a governor, or whether it's a legislature or the president of the United States. Do not be bashful. Make your choices. Realize that there are some compromises you have to make, that nobody gets everything. But try to figure it that way, and then grab one other person you know who may not go to those polls, get them registered, and have them come down with you. And don't even bother asking them, well, as long as you support me, or if you support me. I feel that if everybody listening takes one other person to the polls, I'll take my chances, like Guy said, that right wins out. I'll take my chances or I'll live with what happens. So that's my, again, on the soapbox, but we can do this immediately. You can do it before the November elections. And I don't care if it's a dog catcher. Find out how he stands on how you feel about it. And and if you have the financial resources or you have the time to invest in a particular issue or a candidate, do it. Do it. And if you can't do any of that, just be informed. Stay informed and get to the polls. End of speech. But,
well, do I have a minute?
We got like
it. Okay. We need to have a little commercial break, I think. And I would just like to let the listeners know that if they're interested in learning more about practical Christianity and what we're doing, how we're doing it, that there is a website that's called www.practicalchristians.org. There's also Facebook pages for the Practical Christian Radio program. That's a group page. And the Practical Christian, that's a fan page. There's a lot of interesting, lively discussions that go on there and things that get posted. If you're interested in communicating with me, you can reach me through www.ncnewthoughtminister.net. In JM, you can usually find on one or the other of our pages, but would you like to tell them how they could reach you? There might be somebody out there that would like some more information about the political aspects of this whole thing.
Well, I have a Facebook page, JM Rivas, and you can reach me at my email address, which is jrivas7073@gmail.com. And happy to respond and happy to talk to anyone who may have a question. And I just want to say that I'm just greatly honored to have had an opportunity to dialogue with all of you, especially Guy, Michelle, Linda. I'm very honored for that because I consider your other two guests to be the forerunner of what's going to become, I think, a very strong, powerful movement and voice in this country. So I'm honored for that.
Right back at you, JM. Absolutely.
Yeah. And thank you, Linda, so much for including us and asking us to be a part of your program this evening.
Oh, it was my honor, it was my privilege.
Yes.
And, Guy, we talked about you a little bit, but give us some information about how people can reach out to you to give, you know, we have a few minutes.
Okay. Well, you know, so Michelle actually gave that information, but, the website is www.practicalchristians.org. That's Christians plural, www.practicalchristians.org. And she was talking about the Facebook pages. I have a fan page called The Practical Christian, and I have a group page where there's a lot of active dialogue going on almost all the time called the Practical Christian Radio Program. So, you know, you find, and it's an open group. You can ask to join. And I don't think we've refused anybody yet. So just come on in, dialogue with us, and find out what we're about. And it's a lot of fun, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. And I read the post. I don't always respond, but I just like to go there and read the post and see what's going on. And sometimes it's very informative, opens my mind up about. I just love to read the post. I'm going to tell you the truth. I just want to thank all of you for being on the program and hold out an open invitation if there's anything going on with the movement or anything that you guys would want to reach out to my listeners about. Feel free to contact me. Michelle knows how to get in touch with me. I'm always open for that, and I feel like it's important that we all stay informed. And the thing about my program is that you don't have to agree with my views, or I don't even have to agree with your views, is that I'm educating you or showing mm-hmm. you a different way of thinking, and that mm-hmm. there's the commonality that I need to know what you're thinking. I need you to know what I'm thinking, because we're all one, really, and we don't have to agree. We can agree to disagree, but that we each respect each other's dialogue. And
absolutely.
Sometimes I think violence happens because we just are ignorant of what another side or issue is thinking. So thank you all for doing that. Thank you all for being on the program. I am so honored
thank
that you.
You
all agreed to be on the program. And this is Soul in the City, and this is a place where we go higher and higher in the spirit and in knowledge, where we seek truth and we stand in the power of truth. So to all, have a great evening. Have a great week.
Thank you. Thank you all.
And thank you all for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank
Take
you
care.
For having us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.